This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
I did not think in my wildest dreams that South Carolina would keep this remotely interesting for even a half. And they did that and had some missed opportunities there in the first half.
Yeah, they had some success. They had trouble finding the end zone. But they moved the ball extremely well. Alabama's got some issues on everyone's going to look at the pass defense, and I'll give you that. They got more issues with the run game than me. They're not getting plays from their middle linebackers, either be Christian Harris. I don't know if Shane Lee's explosive enough to get to the corner. And when they brought Ali Cajo in, he overran a couple plays. They gave up 31 first downs. That's the fourth most third downs Alabama's given in the Nick Saban era. Two to Clemson in national championship games, and Johnny Manziel had 31. Or it ties it, rather. That's the most they've ever given up under Saban. Johnny Manziel had 31 first downs in 2013. They got issues.
Ryan Helinski, for his first SEC start, throwing it 57 times, had a couple of touchdowns, had some good throws, but throws for over 300 yards. You mentioned the rushing as far as rushing defense. Rico Dowdle goes for over 100 yards. Even bigger concern now is you continue to lose bodies on the defense. LeBryan Ray, he could be lost for the year.
He could be, yeah. It's just another issue. This is just going to be a different Alabama year. This is not going to be a year in which the defense rules, and they don't need it because they put up 47 points on offense and couldn't run. They ran the ball 15 times with their running backs, like their main running backs, Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, 15 times. They didn't need it. And Tua still didn't play the entire game and threw for 444 yards and 5 touchdowns. We have to change the way we're judging Alabama. It's no longer 2011 where defense is going to rule the day, because this team's going to hang 45-50 on most teams they play. Now, when they get into the playoffs and that defense isn't as good, that's going to be issues. When they get in postseason, they play Georgia, and they can't stop the run, they're going to be issues. But every other team they play, they're going to probably score 40, 45 points.
I've gotten to the point where I don't care. I don't care about the defense, and I don't care about the running game. And I was debating McElroy with it this morning. We were texting back and forth, and he's talking about the run game. We can ask him about it Wednesday. And I told him, I was like, man, I don't care anymore. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't matter. The receivers and the quarterback are that good. And you can say, well, look what's happened to other teams before, and air raid teams and teams with good quarterbacks and good receivers, and it's come back to bite them. And there's been a point in time where it caught them and it bites them in the rear end. I don't know if they've been this good. I don't know if we've had this good of a quarterback with this many good receivers before. And they have some other weapons that can help them in other areas. And I'm just... Tom and Jordan and I talked about it with our show that we did after our game Saturday night. And those two are, the run game, man. They got to find something and holes in the defense. So what? I literally don't. It does not matter to me. It doesn't. Now, we can sit here maybe heading to the SEC championship game, or maybe sit here for the college football playoff and have a different discussion going into those games. But for right now, it doesn't matter. Does not matter. And people trying to take Alabama off tier one in college football because they're struggling to run the ball?
Come on.
You got a dominant defensive tackle in Raekwon Davis. You got a guy in Xavier McKinney on the back end that's playing great football. You got some corners that are playing good football. They have enough on defense to be okay. They're going to be fine.
Well, you mentioned the receivers, both of you, and yeah. But on a 4th-and-3... Who comes out of the backfield?
Well,
it's Najee. He gets lost. And
that was by design.
Incredible run.
They threw the ball to the running backs, I think, 7-8 times, and they scored 2 touchdowns with passes to running backs. They had multiple explosive plays with plays to the running backs. And I think that's what this is where Najee's most comfortable. He is most comfortable in space. That's just who he is. I thought he played better. The offensive line still has some issues because of the 15 runs that I mentioned with running backs. 4 of them were negative plays, meaning there's either no gain or loss of yards. 4 out of 15. That is a horrible percentage for run efficiency. And that suggests to me that it's not all the running backs, because I didn't see a whole lot of dancing in the backfield. That's telling me that the guys are getting whipped up front. But they're still mixing and matching guys. I just go back to what I told you, Landrum. They're still going to score so many points that most teams can't hang with them.
Here's the only concern. If you want to nitpick Alabama, here's the only concern. Protection against pressure packages. Because they struggle trading out some games, stunts, and blitzes. And if they continue doing that, they're going to get their quarterback hurt. And if the quarterback gets hurt, they got problems. Now we can start talking about the lack of a run game and maybe some of the holes on defense if Tua's not playing quarterback. Because they're a different team if that's the case. Totally different team. But if Tua's playing quarterback and those wide receivers are all dressed out, doesn't matter. Run game doesn't matter. Defense holes doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Here's the thing. Jerry Jeudy had a relatively quiet game. From what we expect from his standards. No big deal because Devontae Smith was unbelievable. Henry Ruggs was unbelievable. I said it before the season. You can't stop all these receivers if Tua has time to throw. It can't be done.
Some news from the NFL. Drew Brees, he's going to miss 6 weeks. Got the ligament there in his throwing hand. Had to leave early in yesterday's game with the Rams. Still awaiting word on Big Ben, who went out with the elbow early in that game. Maybe surgery. You certainly hope not as a Steelers fan. And James Conner got banged up as well. Not a good start for Pittsburgh.
No, not a great start. It's the first Sunday since 2008 that I have not had access to a Pittsburgh Steelers game.
Wow.
It was a weird feeling yesterday. And then I saw the score and I was like, doesn't bother me as much.
Probably better I missed it.
I'm cool.
Didn't miss very much.
Time
for our train hot and cold of the weekend. My hot guys, you say Brandon who? Wimbush? No, he was on the sideline. Dylan Gabriel, quarterback for Central Florida, 22 of 30, 347 yards, 4 touchdowns. His second college start, UCF gets the win, convincing, over Stanford. 45-27. Now in 2 starts, he's 38 of 62 for 9 touchdowns, 719 yards. Pretty crazy. That is my hot of the weekend.
Same.
I'm going to go Jalen Hurts. 3 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. The guy has been phenomenal in an Oklahoma uniform, and they look scary. Second quarterback in Sooners history with multiple games of 150 yards rushing, and he's only played 3 games. Jamel Holloway is the all-time leader in that category with 3 150-yard rushing games in his Oklahoma career. Jalen Hurts already has 2 after 3 games as their quarterback, and that offense just looks flat out scary.
Well, they get the off week this week, so they can work on
some things.
Well, they
technically had an off week this past week.
Well, they did. UCLA. Anybody who plays UCLA. All right, the cold for me is Maryland's offense. We talked about them the first couple of weeks, averaging 70 points a game. It was the number 1 scoring offense in college football. They ran into the Temple Owls. Josh Jackson, he looked very ordinary. 15 of 38, 183 yards, a touchdown, an interception. Maryland loses to the Owls, a game that Vegas Runner actually said all the sharps were loading up on Temple. Maryland looked very Maryland-like.
Got a little excited about them a little too early, maybe?
Maybe, just a little bit. All right, cold for you, Aaron.
I'm going to go Kentucky's luck against Florida.
Ooh.
Because 3 straight years, they should have walked away with a win over the Gators, and they only got 1. Missing a chip shot field goal at the end of the game. Just brutal. Just the way that they, 2 years ago, they leave a receiver uncovered twice in the same game. It's just they find just bizarre ways to lose to Florida. It's just, if you're a Kentucky fan, just gut-wrenching the way that your team loses to Florida after you played well enough to win both those games. Or actually 3 of those games.
Well, Sawyer Smith, he's got to protect the football, but we'll talk about that game a little bit later on. You're cold?
Cold for me is the ACC.
Wintertime.
Georgia Tech loses to Citadel? You'd think you'd be a little familiar with the triple option.
Come on, Jeff.
NC State goes down to West Virginia? That's not as bad of a loss, but
that was
Boston
bad.
College losing to Kansas is pretty bad. You still have A.J. Dillon, right? Still have a returning starting quarterback. And then, not necessarily, and this is maybe an asterisk onto my cold, Pitt losing to Penn State, but the decision by Pat Narduzzi to attempt a field goal from the 2-yard line. Guys, Pitt was the first team in the last 15 years to attempt a field goal from the 1 or 2 yard line down 4 or 7 points that late in the game and they miss it. Even if you hit it. To me, inexplicable to be in that situation, a chance to beat your rival. And by the way, don't have them scheduled again. Chance to find a way to tie that game and you don't do it? That's bad. That's bad ball. ACC playing bad ball this weekend. And then you could compound that with the Michael Carter not stepping out of bounds early enough, ended up being the wrong call anyway, NC weight game that wasn't a conference game, Friday night deal.
Clock management.
Just go out of bounds.
Just go out of bounds. I had a good one in Charlottesville. We'll talk about Florida State and Virginia a little bit later on.
Which is weird because people are a little bit excited about, okay, you were going to get one Hail Mary?
Yeah.
you don't win the game with that, but still, you just have some wherewithal of the clock and where you are on the field.
Alabama, a 47-23 winner over South Carolina. Ryan Helinski, the freshman, 36 of 57, 324 yards, 2 touchdowns, did throw a pick. Aaron, if you have a takeaway from this game and you're hearing fans, and the biggest concern is, well, are there holes in Alabama's defense? That was... And the people that I talked to, well, there's something not right there. Well, you've had a lot of injuries on that side of the ball as well. Are there holes in Alabama's defense?
Holes may be too big a word. I think there's some issues. I think they're more susceptible to the run now than we've been for a while, than we've seen for a while from Alabama. Listen, the first play of the second half, which is they should be relatively fresh. It was hot. I mean, it was really hot in Columbia on Saturday, but they should be relatively fresh coming out of half. 27-yard run. And they gave up a 27. They gave up a 33. And it wasn't as if, I mean, South Carolina was just running the ball a whole lot. But they had some success, more success than we're used to seeing. And they do have issues. And the issues stem from depth. Just they don't have the experienced player. I mean, they had to pull Christian Harris out of the game because he kind of went what Nick Saban says, rat trap. He couldn't handle the moment. He was forgetting assignments. He was letting it affect him. They had to pull him in the second half. But who did they bring in? They didn't bring in Markel Benton, the most experienced guy. They brought in Ali Cajo. And he hadn't played a whole lot of football. And then they just decided to play him because he needed the experience. Listen, is it an issue? No. It's an issue if you want to win a national championship. Because I don't think you can win a national championship without a good defense. My opinion. You have to be able to, maybe not even great, but you have to have some playmakers. You got to be able to turn the football over, okay? Because I don't know if Auburn's defense was great in 2010, but it had playmakers. They got negative plays. We haven't seen a lot of that from Alabama this year, but it doesn't matter in the regular season because they're going to score at will. They're that good. Running the football. Maybe passing the football is the run for them because it's a different sort of passing attack this year. I mean, they're controlling the clock when they move it. It's a lot of plays. It's a lot of yards. But it's maybe the quick slant is the run game this year because the quick slant on the RPO was open all day. South Carolina didn't come close to covering it one time. The RPO slant, whether it was the slot receiver or the outside receiver, was open all day. We saw 2 touchdowns out of it. So... it just all depends. You want to win a lot of games in the regular season? Yeah, there's probably not an issue. There's not an issue with this team. Do you want to win a national championship? Defense is going to have to get better.
This sets up for a fun game. I don't know about College Station. I don't know if Texas A&M offensively is going to be good enough to put up a bunch of points and try to keep up with Alabama or defensively. But LSU and Alabama there at Bryant-Denny, the way LSU's offense has looked, but their defense still, who do you trust more? Is it Alabama getting a stop on LSU, or is it LSU getting a stop on Alabama? I'd take Alabama.
And Bryant-Denny, probably Alabama. I think the secondaries play well. And I say that fully understanding what they gave up. Alabama didn't get much of a pass rush against a freshman quarterback. He had all day at times to throw the football. He didn't get rattled. I was really impressed with Helinski. So much so, I don't think Jake Bentley gets his job back next year.
If Jake Bentley's there next year.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
I think he might be a coveted graduate transfer quarterback.
He's been around a while. He may just go ahead and try to play in the league. I can see him just trying to move on. Yeah. I mean, he's got a good skill set, and as we've seen, you cannot have been an overly productive quarterback or successful quarterback in college and still get an opportunity on a roster there. So that may be a situation where he just looks to go ahead and start playing somewhere else. But even past Tulinski, I like the plan that South Carolina brought to the table. And there have not been a lot of times the past 3 years where I have walked away from a South Carolina game saying, oh, man, that game plan was great. I thought South Carolina had a wonderful plan, number one, to protect their quarterback, and Aaron mentioned it with quick throws, number two, to attack the perimeter. You do a couple of things there when you can have a little bit of success with it, and I give guys like Brian Edwards credit for catching the ball and just physically getting north and south. I give a couple different running backs on that roster credit for taking outside zone stretch plays and really stretching them out, being patient, and then, boom, getting north and south out past the hash or out near the numbers. So what you do is you get those linebackers running. You get them thinking. You get them a little bit tired. You get them over-pursuing some, which can set up some play action. There was one third and like four where South Carolina kind of ran that fake outside zone and pulled it and just quickly hit the tight end. Like, they had been hanging on to that play for four or five series because you knew you had the defense flowing. It was a nice play call at the time. They kind of, now they're, granted, they had a new tight end that hadn't been on film, that no one had seen, that had just become eligible. That was a guy that helped them a little bit within that plan. But I thought they had a nice plan to help protect the quarterback, give him things he's comfortable with, didn't make his decision making overly complicated, and they attacked the perimeter, which makes the D line run too. If the D line's thin, what's the first thing you want to do? Make them run.
Side to side.
Throw screens. Get to the perimeter. Get to the outside. Then they don't want to play against the run if you try to go between the tackles, which I don't think South Carolina ever had sustained success between the tackles in that game. But they got a couple jump balls down the field, and they had a couple good play calls, and I thought they had a really nice plan against that defense, and they still lost by 20-some points. So we can say nice things about South Carolina, and we can talk about the concerns of Alabama, but they still went on the road and won by three scores. Like, what a... Alabama did what they needed to do. There can be concerns, but I think for me, where I was trying to come from earlier in the show, those concerns for me are saved until the postseason. I just don't see where it's going to get them in a lot of trouble until the postseason. Can LSU score on them? Yeah. LSU's got a lot of concerns of their own. LSU can't run the ball. We're talking about Alabama can't run the ball. LSU can't run the ball.
Mm-mm. God, what world are we living in where we utter that statement and it's true?
Auburn really wanted to put an emphasis on the running game this week. You try to get some kind of positive momentum before heading to College Station, Texas this weekend. Well, they were able to do that. They did it in a variety of ways. Joey Gatewood comes in, carries the ball 12 times. He looked like the physical quarterback that we expected running the football, and it was against Kent State. But if you can't do it against Kent State, you can't do it against anybody. And Bo Nix thought he needed to be efficient coming into the game. But he was passing the ball. He was 12 of 16. He had a overthrow on what could have been a touchdown. I thought from an offensive standpoint, if you're Gus Malzahn, if you're J.B. Grimes, there was some good to take away from this. The bad, Bailey Sharp, who fills in for Prince Tega, who did not go at the tackle. Gus Malzahn lets us know that he's going to have surgery. He had an injury. He's going to miss 6 weeks. Cole, what did you think Auburn did differently to help them pick up more yards and get that running game going in this game versus what we've seen the first 2 weeks?
I'm just going to ask you a question. Based on things I have complained or been concerned about with the Auburn offense for the first 2 weeks of the season, what do you think they did different?
They did not bring a lot of attention in the box, and they spread things out.
Running the ball at a 4 and 5 wide receiver sets.
Crazy.
Man, it's crazy when you can empty the box based on your formation and personnel groupings. What kind of space can be created just by doing that? I thought Auburn had a lot of success running the ball in four receiver sets. Did the offensive line play pretty good football? Yeah, they did. And you mentioned it. A couple of different backs ran the ball hard. I thought they used the pass game first to sort of loosen some things up and then come back to the run game. And back to that mindset, wanting to go into this game saying, hey, we're going to be able to run the football. You want to build confidence in every aspect of your team, but if that's what you're going to lean on and that's going to be who you are, I said this in the LSU game, and this is applicable with a lot of football teams, and I want listeners to remember this for today and for the rest of the season. When it comes to running the football, you cannot be selectively committed to running the ball. meaning you can't go into the Kent State game and say, oh, we're going to run the football today, or you're going to get against another team that maybe passes the football around and know you have to maintain possession and say, oh, we're going to be successful running the ball today. And also, you can't just say, well, that's third and goal from the two. Let's go play ground and pound now. Or you can't say, hey, we've put up 45, but our opponents put up 42. We really need to play ground and pound in the last 6 minutes of this game, maintain possession, and get a win. You cannot be selectively committed to running the football. It's either in your DNA or it's not. It's either who you are or you are not that type of football team. So I think if Auburn's going to be this kind of a team for the rest of the year with a freshman quarterback, a veteran offensive line, experienced running backs, you would think that's probably what's going to help bring you the most success. You have to find ways to make it go. I was appreciative of the fact that they tried to do it out of different formations within different personnel groupings. I think they tried to get a few different guys involved. You mentioned Gatewood. Harold Joyner got a couple carries. I think he's someone who can help them in the run game as the season progresses. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the offensive line just looked like 95 Nebraska all of a sudden. But they did look good. Mostly had a hat on a hat. There was some protection breakdowns that I was concerned with. Now I would like to see this offense morph a little bit more. And if they're going to beat Texas A&M, if they're going to beat Florida, if they're going to beat Mississippi State, I still think they need more diversity. I still think things need to change. And I think things need to continue to look different as the season progresses. But you showed now, and you allowed your team to build some confidence running the football in some different ways. And I think that's a big plus heading into a game, which they're going to see the best front that they've seen all year, one of the best defensive lines that they will play the entire season. Running yards are going to be tough to come by against Texas A&M this Saturday.
All right. Well, Aaron, you look at what Bo Nix was able to do in this game. But what you don't want, if you're Gus Malzahn, is him heading into College Station and having to ride his arm and him having to win the football game. You've got to have those other pieces that you can utilize in that game.
Well, he ran 79 plays. 62 of them were rushes. We went into this game saying that we thought they were going to try to get some confidence in that run game. That's what they did. And they didn't, I mean, they didn't put the game on Bo Nix's shoulder, which is what they'd basically done the first 2 weeks as many times as he threw the ball. So they set him up to have success. They set him up to have a little more confidence exiting that game. But they ran the ball dominant. I mean, look how many guys ran the ball. I mean, you get, what, five guys at least that had seven carries? So pretty impressive. Now you got to take that confidence into Texas A&M.
Cam Martin, that was a different change of pace for Auburn. He had the touchdown burst. Booby Whitlow held on to the football. I thought it was funny. He fumbled the ball out of bounds. He immediately went and picked it up. So the coach is certainly in his ear there during the week of practice. And Joey Gatewood, are we going to see more of Joey Gatewood going forward? Because we saw a little bit of it against Tulane, and we saw a little bit more of it now against Kent State. Or does this become all of a sudden on Saturday get to College Station and Joey Gatewood's nowhere to be found? And we're talking about this on Monday. Where was Joey Gatewood? Right now, if you're a Heisman voter, who's getting your number one vote?
My number one vote? Probably Joe Burrow. I mean, he beat Texas on the road. I know Georgia Southern's not a huge win. Northwestern State's not a huge win. But 83% on the year? 1,324 yards, 11 touchdowns, two picks. He threw a bad pick against Northwestern State. I think he just got greedy. But, I mean, right now, based on level of competition and numbers, I'm going Joe Burrow.
What about for you, Aaron?
You know, I get asked now to vote my top three on The Athletic, and they have a straw poll that they put out for all the beat writers in college football, and I don't like participating in it because it's ridiculous. It's only been three games. Not everyone's played a similar level of competition. And I'm kind of tired of it just being a quarterback award. So I almost had a vote in protest this week. And if anyone's seen The Athletic's Heisman poll this year, there's one defensive player on it, and that's from me. I put Derrick Brown on there, and I know he got hurt and all that, but I'm just tired of it. Just we're so myopic that it can only be a quarterback, and this whole Jalen Hurts love. He's played wonderful. I mean, he's played outstanding, but we saw him last year. We honestly think he's a completely different player. That's bothering me a little bit. But you know, if you're going to go quarterbacks, you can't go wrong with Joe Burrow or Justin Fields or Tua Tagovailoa.
I'm going Tua.
Or Jalen Hurts.
I'm going Tua because whether you like it or not, what is it? Best player on best team?
You know, that was the first game he's ever thrown for 400 yards.
Yeah, and he threw for 5 touchdowns.
Because he gets lifted before most games,
right?
Before he can hit 400.
But what we saw on Saturday, you said, well, if the running game's not going or if the defense, he's that good and maybe just the most dynamic player at that position in college football right now.
One of those he threw to Devonta Smith. Watch the way he works the pocket. And then watch the angle he throws the football in and hits Devonta in stride for a touchdown. I mean, he's really good. But what Jalen's doing is tremendous. The running ability. I mean, it's going to be. I think Jalen's going to win it. He's going to put up ridiculous numbers, and we are so obsessed with numbers. He's going
to
win it.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers Jalen has, though, guys, when he gets into the teeth of the Big 12 schedule. And I know that's maybe an oxymoron, but based on what TCU was able to do on the road at Purdue defensively, maybe they could throw some looks at Jalen and that offense that he hasn't seen through the first three games, quite frankly.
Jalen would be 3 for me. He's completing 80% of the year. That's insane. 9 touchdowns, 0 picks. He's got the 373 yards rushing, 4 touchdowns there as well, 880 passing. So I would have Burrow 1, 2, Jalen 3. If I was going top 5, I think Sam Ellinger might be number 4 for me. 73% on the year, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, 956 yards. Obviously, he carved up an LSU defense that I thought was the best secondary in college football, not just the SEC. He carved him up.
Justin Fields is going to be 5 for you?
No.
You just refused to vote for him.
No, that's not it. I think there's a guy that so far has had a better year.
Okay, that's fair.
You don't want to know who it is?
Go ahead. I think that there's a bias. There's a bias against Justin Fields.
Well, let me introduce you to Oklahoma State running back Chuba Howard.
Chuba.
66 carries, 521 yards, 7 rushing touchdowns.
Where is he playing in?
Oklahoma State. That's also not having played the majority of the game against McNeese State week 2. He only had 8 carries in that game. Against Oregon State, he went 26 for 221. And against Tulsa, he went 32 for 256. So he would be number 5 on my list right now. Throwing a running back in. It's not often, guys, that we get these coaches' press conferences and come away with startling information and come away with groundbreaking information. Oftentimes, it's a lot of coach speak. They're not going to give us a lot of information on injuries or who's playing or what the game plan is going to be like. But every now and then, a coach will take the podium and give you inside information to their program that you might never know was there.
I think we got it this
and
week.
Nick Saban has done that this week, heading into a monster game against Southern Miss, which, by the way, if you were listening to his press conference, he gave you a little bit of a tip there at a guy named Jalen Adams, number 1 in the nation in kickoff returns. He's got 5 returns for 237 yards and 2 touchdowns. Number 2 in the nation in punt returns. He's got 4 punt returns for 100 yards and a touchdown. But that all aside, Nick Saban has taken us inside the program as to how these wide receivers at Alabama are able to do what they do. Dropping this quote today about his receivers' greatness at his press conference.
You know, guys have good hands because they have good hands.
You wonder why he's considered the GOAT.
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
I mean, just, you know. Sometimes we question him. Sometimes we wonder how he does it. And then he just takes us inside.
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
The question that wasn't the question is, how do you teach hand strength or how do you?
you don't teach this. This is
guys have good hands because they have good hands.
Going in there.
There's a lot of truth.
Let Scott Cochran try to. You don't develop this, Landrum.
Either you can catch or catch or not catch.
This is essentially.
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
Now, when Kirby Smart sat down with us at SEC Media Days, remember this, Aaron? He said, I don't know what the big concern is with receivers. These guys have been catching footballs since they were little. Just goes back to having good hands.
You know why guys have good hands, right?
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
You got pretty good hands? Aaron, you got pretty good hands?
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
Cole? Hands? Pretty good
guys
hands?
Guys have good hands because they have good hands.
What you say, Ben?
Either do or you don't. But if you do,
guys
you
have good hands because they have good hands.
In all seriousness, the Jalen Adams, I saw him, what he said about Jalen Adams, you mentioned the stat. I saw him play in high school when he played for Minor. Kid is a really explosive player, super explosive. He's got a punt return for 95 yards and a kickoff return for 100 yards.
By the way, UAB's Myron Mitchell is number two in the nation in kickoff return yards.
He's really good. Both of them play in the same division.
The main takeaway for me from that press conference is the fact that we're entering week four, and all of a sudden, there's competition again at the will linebacker. Now, at least you're starting to develop some depth with two guys playing, but there's still two really inexperienced guys behind playing beside a guy who's a true freshman. So it's either Christian Harris, who started all three games thus far, or it's Ali Kehu, who came in relief because Christian Harris couldn't handle it mentally during the game. That's where they are. You would have hoped, because if you put in Ali Kehu now, you're basically starting all over. Right? I mean, you were going to use the, what do we say? At least this happened at the beginning of the season so these youngsters can get three or four games under their belt before, you know, the real bullets sort of start flying.
Well, we heard the question about the field goal kicker and the punting. And Saban said as a field goal kicker, you got to have that sniper mentality. Will Reichert, while no, he wasn't perfect in this past game, the second game, he was actually pretty good.
He was 2 for 2.
And you're going to see inconsistency.
It's not the field goals. It's the extra points. It's a 17-yard kick.
Yeah. Vinatieri missed two yesterday. They're a little bit longer in the NFL.
And I don't blame Will Reichert. It's obviously there's a curse over Tuscaloosa with kicking.
Yeah, but they played.
That's the only thing that can explain.
But they played this game in Columbia.
But it travels.
The curse travels with the team?
Yes.
Three-man front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.